This podcast is sponsored by Lennon Espinoza Mortgage and Realty Services, where you can refinance your mortgage, potentially saving you thousands of dollars with a lower interest rate. Call Lennon Espinoza Mortgage and Realty Services at 323-272-7320. Hey, rock stars! From Rockman USA Studios in Washington, D.C., this is Rock on the Money. I'm talking about your saving, investing, and protecting all those hard-earned monies. We're here to coach you along your path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda, a corporate in-house lawyer and real estate agent. We're so grateful you've joined us. Call us with your questions and comments, 989-AAA-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Check us out on Facebook at Rock on the Money or our website at rockonthemoney.com. Good evening, Amanda.
Hey, Craig. How's it going?
Pretty good. You know what I have right here in front of me?
What?
You hear this? It's cake.
Oh, I love cake.
I just made it. There's always time for cake.
What kind of cake?
Banana.
Oh, well, that doesn't tempt me as much.
Yeah, it's not even from scratch. They had five boxes for five at the grocery store for Duncan Hines. I'm like, a dollar a box? I figured that was impressive for savvy savings.
That's pretty good. Right. Yep. And then what, you have to add a couple ingredients?
Yeah, you still got to put three eggs, oil, and water in there. I'm like, oh, yeah. Should have just went from scratch, but whatever.
And did you do frosting?
No, I don't do frosting.
Oh, okay.
To cut down on the calories.
Yeah, I don't like frosting either. I only like cream cheese frosting.
Yeah. I don't like put a little whipped cream on it is what I do. Just a little.
Yep, that's good. Like Cool Whip.
Keep the calories down. Mm-hmm, treat. Little treat for the podcast.
Yeah, I have an update. I would love a piece.
Can't send it over Skype. For those now we've given away a little. You know, a lot of people think you're like sitting next to me when we do this.
Hmm.
She's actually in Florida. I'm in Maryland. So So the magic of Skype. So what kind of magic we got on this show?
Well, first of all, I have an update for those who have been concerned. I did get a replacement flat iron.
Good job.
I know, finally. Also, my first few items on eBay sold, and I shipped them out today.
Oh, okay. What's your eBay update?
So I sold two items with a net profit of $75.
Wow.
Yeah.
I posted three items that may net me $900.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. High so I posted items. Two more items this week. I'm just, you know, it takes me some motivation. I have to like get myself motivated.
Yeah,
so I do two things at a time. Problem.
Yeah.
I space it out.
So I think I'm at $1,100 right now profit.
In just a couple of weeks. That's great.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. I want to try and do a 2,000 by next week. We'll see what happens.
Whoa.
Yeah. Not bad for stuff just sitting in my house.
Not bad at all.
If my kids were still here, I'd sell them, but they're not here. So, all right, what we got?
Today we have our topic today is going to be the best way to invest in gold. Ooh. And we have a savvy savings segment on used car buying.
How and timely then, is that, by the way?
It is timely. And before we get into all that, though, we've got a couple of social media questions.
Yes, we do. Here's the first one. You ready?
I'm ready.
I have a 401k mixed with these three mutual funds. Can you tell me your thoughts? Is this correct? 50% Vanguard Target Retire 2040 fund, 25% in the Harbor Capital Appreciation Fund, 25% in the Vanguard Institutional 500 Index. Okay. How about I take a stab at this one for good reason? Because, you know, we like to tell everybody, we don't advise them. We tell them if we were in their shoes, and technically I am in their shoes because I'm actually in the same exact 401k they're in. So,
well, except you don't have a target date of 2040.
No. We're going to get into that. So, first of all, there is no right or wrong answer with any of these 401ks. Okay. It just depends on the strategy you're looking for. Now, there may be better things we can do to tweak it to make it, I don't know. I almost said more correct. But First of all, I'm noticing, Amanda, that they're in the 2040 fund. So right. Can we just assume they're 20 years away from retirement? Because that's what mm-hmm. it should be. We've had people submit their mixes to us before, and they were in a year target date fund that was nowhere near their retirement fund. They just picked it. So we're just going to assume they're 20 years away. I think you and I agree she needs to be aggressive, or they need to be aggressive mm-hmm. 20 years out. So the first thing I'm noticing wrong with this, after I just said there's no right or wrong, the first thing yes. I've noticed that's wrong, you have a target date fund and you have two other mutual funds. That's not how target date funds work. You either do the target date or you do other funds.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Because the target date fund itself is its own little mix of stocks and bonds and stuff. And it automatically adjusts as you get closer and closer to that year that's in the title, which should be your retirement age that you picked out. So that's what that's for. You either do that or the other funds. So that's right. One thing we need to correct. Number two, you have two of my favorite funds within this 401k that we're talking about. It's at an airline. So they have the Harbor Capital Appreciation Fund and the Vanguard Institutional 500 Index, which is a mirror of the S&P 500 Index that we've mm-hmm, mm-hmm. talked numerous times about. The Harbor Capital does take care of one checkbox where it consistently beats the S&P 500 Index, which every fund that you invest in should do that if you're picking funds. Right now, if you want to do a 50-50 blend of the two or go a little heavier in the Harbor Capital, that would be great. And I think a lot of listeners we have, Amanda, do yeah. just that. So that's a very popular mix. The last thing I want to just briefly remind people is don't change your mutual funds. Once you have good, solid mutual funds selected, don't sit there and just keep changing them every month. There's some right. subscription newsletters that are promoted to the airline industry out there for their 401ks, and they suggest them to jump in and out of funds all the time, trying to time markets. Don't do any of that crap. That's stupid. That is wrong, by the way. Just don't do that. That's my soapbox. I kept it pretty quick, didn't I? I'm getting better.
You did.
Yeah. Here, I got one for you.
Okay.
Question number two. My car was hit from behind. It was seemed to be a minor accident, and everyone was fine. Whew, good. The car was totaled due to age, mileage, repair costs. Has that ever happened to you, Amanda?
No, I've never had a totaled car.
That's happened to me. Minor damage, but because of age, they just write off. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it looks fine. But it happens. It happens a lot. It gets people. Anyway, back to the question. So no, I'm buying a new car, but I'm going to pay cash. Yes.
Awesome. Yep.
I've never done that before. And now I can because I have no debt on car and savings in place. Now, this is funny. I guess we have said this. When y'all say offer dealer cash, do you literally mean walk into the dealership with cash, Amanda?
Okay. That's a good question.
It is a good question. It's like, okay, you're paying cash for a car, but how do you pay for the car?
Well, you can write them a check.
Yeah.
I would go in there with my checkbook. But I mean, you certainly can bring cash. They're not going to turn it down.
No, no one turns that down. Isn't there...
I don't know if I'd want to walk around with that much cash, but...
I'm trying to think, because I think there is a rule. Isn't there a $10,000 federal rule out there that if you pay for anything in cash over $10,000?
Yes.
So what's yeah. that? Do you know, without me Googling the answer,
oh,
I believe just, that has
I mean,
to be reported.
They're
going
to have to report
right?
it to the IRS right. is all, and then they're going to want to figure out where that money came from just to confirm you're not money laundering. Yeah. So just write
Drug
a check.
Dealers. Yeah, just like I have bought a car with cash, but I went to the bank, got a certified check. And usually if it's your home bank, they do that for free. Bank,
I bought my son's first car with cash in quotes, but I just wrote a personal check.
The dealership will accept that. There you go.
Yeah.
Love it. That was easy. That was a funny question, but it's a,
but
good,
it's a
question.
Good question. Yeah,
it is because no
question.
One you never think about that when you reach that level where you can buy anything with cash. It's like, well, how do I do that? Mm-hmm. And wait till we get to the gold segment. Here's question number three. When you go on vacation, where do you go to find cheap flights?
Oh, I love this one.
I love it too, because you may have different ideas than I have. So because there's a lot of different ways you could do this. This is dangerous with a lot of flight attendant listeners, by the way.
Okay. Well, so why don't you go ahead and start and then I'll add on.
Okay. I'm just going to go quickly over two different ways that you could do it. I mean, there's a lot of subscription things you could do. These are the free ways you can do it. There's a neat tool that I'm not sure a lot of people know about over at Kayak, kayak.com. You've heard of them, haven't you, Amanda?
I have, of course.
So
yeah.
There's a great Explore tool. If you just Google Kayak Explore tool, it'll come up. And what it is, it's a big worldwide map. And on the left-hand side, you can pick your options. Like, how much is your budget? Let's say you're going on a honeymoon. And you're like, well, this is how much we can spend. Like $2,000 for a honeymoon vacation, dream vacation. You put that in there. How many leg of the flights you're willing to deal with. And a couple other options. And the map on the right side, big global map, starts popping up with all these fares. Okay. And you can zoom in. You can look over in Europe, Africa, South America, Australia, and these prices are everywhere. It's amazing how different the prices are when they pop up. Like I just put in there before we started recording, looking for beaches, nonstop flight. And it already knew I was in the DC area. So I got three major airports here, which is nice. And I could either go to, I don't know why Seattle. I know Seattle had beaches, but Seattle popped up for $100. And I don't know what airline it was. I didn't go that far. I could go to Puerto Rico for $110. But then this place over in Italy popped up for $300.
And okay.
My eye caught that one. I can't even pronounce the word because I don't know Italian, but it looked really awesome. That's all I know. I don't even know if they're open right now with, you know, coronavirus and everything. There might be
probably
closed.
Not because it's Italy.
Why. It's probably why it's $300.
The flights are so cheap.
You might get there, but you ain't coming back. But anyway, it's just a neat little tool. The other thing, which is really my favorite, is Google Flights. Google has a lot of different services and tools out there that people just don't know about. If you just go google.com/flights, you can go in there and put your destinations and everything in there, and it will show you a grid of the best times. It knows the best time of the week, best hour of when to anticipate a certain fare that you're looking for.
Huh.
It uses AI. Here's a side note on that. I use Google for restaurant reviews and to book my restaurant. But now they always show you in there when it's the busiest for a restaurant, so you know when to go to a restaurant. But they
I love that. So when if I'm ready to go out to a restaurant and I'm like, oh, I'd love to go to brunch. What's a good brunch place? And then I see, oh, it's super busy at 10 a.m. I'm like, hey, get your clothes on. Let's go at 9.
Well, now they've added a brand new feature in the last week or two, that there's a new color that shows in that little bar, vertical bar of the busy time, that how many people are actually in a store. Let's say you want to go to a CVS or Sam's Club or Walmart, it actually knows how many people are anticipated to be inside the store during these coronavirus times. So it's a different color on the bar to warn you if it's heavily loaded with people inside. I don't know how Google knows all this stuff. It's probably off of our phones.
Oh, I'm sure
they got
the phones,
anyway.
Because all of our phones, you've accepted the terms and conditions so they can track you at all times.
And I'm sure we read all of those terms and conditions that you speak so highly of. But anyway, go back to Google Flights. You can also set up fare alerts on there. Super easy. And this is a free service, by the way, like everything else Google has. And when it hits a certain price you're looking for, it will notify you immediately about that flight. The other thing you need to remember is Southwest does not appear on a lot of the search engines if you're going to use Expedia or these other ones. Southwest and many of these other airlines right now, I mean, I know we're recording this in May of 2020. I don't know when people are listening to this podcast. They kind of live forever. But during this coronavirus time, There are flights by some airlines that are $11 I saw this week. I think it was Frontier. But Southwest is the one airline which does not pay to be on all these other services. So if you want to use Southwest, you have to go to southwest.com. And I'm not just trying to promote them. It's just the way it's always been. That's why you see the ads always saying southwest.com. It's not on Expedia, Travelocity, or any of these other search engines. And right now, you can pretty much fly anywhere for $49. They got the summer sale going on right now. So what ideas do you have, Amanda?
Well, so I am loyal to one particular airline, so I usually look there. But if I, for myself, if I'm booking myself, but if I'm booking for other people, which I often do for our kids, then I like to use Expedia. That's that's my go-to for flights only. But if we're looking for a vacation, I never look at just flights alone. I am a big fan of these travel discount packages. So I subscribe to Travelzoo, and I love getting their top 20 each week. And so that's how we bought our trip to Iceland. It was a package deal, included flights, hotel, breakfast. You could add on some excursions and everything. And I think round trip for two people was just over $2,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And then the other one I like is called Dunhill Travel, I think it's called. Yeah, so I use that one, and I have them send me emails each week with their sales. And then Great Value Vacations, that's who we're using for our Ireland trip.
Ooh, you're going to have to give me all these links so I can put them in the show notes.
Yeah, but most of them originate from Travelzoo. So if you've got Travelzoo, you can search there. And they have a lot of really great search features on the Travelzoo site. Groupon used to be a go-to for me, but then I noticed that most of the deals overlap with Travelzoo. But you can still search the Groupon vacations as well. And sometimes those deals are a little bit different.
Nice.
Yeah. So I like to look at the whole package deal in that case. But if I have something in mind, like a couple of years ago, we wanted to take a vacation specifically to Hawaii with family and everything, then I book all those things separately.
Oh, yeah. I love that people are asking travel questions again. I love that. I heard.
Yeah, we can do a Savvy Savings segment on that at some point, but I just didn't think now would be a good time.
Yeah, it's slow. I heard Gary Kelly of Southwest State on the news the other day. They're up to 25% capacity, which is pretty good considering that things are still closed out there. So I've also seen reports on Facebook of full flights. There's a lot of people on these planes. So people apparently want to travel. So
probably because there's fewer planes to get on, but
that has a lot to do with it. That does have a lot to do with it.
Well, my son will be traveling by airplane this coming weekend, so we'll see. I did see on the news that they're suggesting you have to get to the airport 4 hours ahead of your flight now. I think that's insanity.
That is insanity.
There's no way. I mean, you're going to spend half your day at the airport now just because they want to do some extra cleaning. That's insane.
One of the jobs that I work at, one of the two, I inspect commercial properties. I won't say what kind. If I need to go to like New York, the time it takes for me to drive to the airport, sit there, go through the security, wait for the flight, get on the flight, fly up there, get the rental car. Sometimes I can drive to New York faster than do all that. So if you add in this 4 hour factor in there, we're talking about the flight's only an hour, but I got a factor of 2 hours going to the airport, going through the whole thing, getting on the plane. We're already at three. I got to get the rental car. Sometimes that's a half hour ordeal.
Right.
I can already be there.
Yeah, exactly.
I think a lot of people are going to start driving.
Yeah, because the airports are just such a hassle.
Which is a great segue to Savvy Savings later if you want to buy another car.
That's right.
All right, let's knock out this topic real quick. The best way to invest in gold. And I'm only bringing this up because I've had no less than 10 questions in last week about asking me, where do I buy my gold at?
Isn't the best way just not to buy gold?
Well, thank you for hitting the punchline. Can we just go right Savvy Savings into... No, I want to explain to people why I don't do physical gold. I know You can Google everything and people are going to have their own opinions on every Facebook group out there. I'm going to tell you why I don't do it and why a lot of other people will recommend you don't do that as well. Once again, Amanda, this is another thing where the people that really promote it are the ones selling it.
Yeah.
Is what it really comes down to.
Or just really uninformed investors, right, who think that they can make a quick buck.
And I know I see a lot of advertisements, a number of them on all day long, on CNBC, all the cable news channels, and they're really marketing to a demographic that appears to be watching those channels during the daytime when everyone else is at work. A lot of retired people are at home and they got money to spend. So you'll notice that the advertisements change based on the demographics of the audience. So I really love the ones where I can't remember the name of the company, but they're promoting the American flags on it a lot. There's a lot of bald eagles. There's these old guys in the rocking chairs on the porch holding their gold coins, saying how much they trust the company. I know you've seen these ads. They're on there all the time.
But I don't watch a whole lot of daytime television.
You do watch The Price is Right, though.
Well, I listen to it. I don't watch it.
But they almost make buying gold, physical gold, like a patriotic thing, is the message you're trying to get out there. So try to ignore all that. The reason why people consider buying physical gold is that people believe it's a hedge against things going bad. Well, when you buy gold, basically you've lost faith in America and you're figuring everything is going to go to crap. And we're now back to just like the S&P 500 index thing, where if that went to zero, you better start finding weapons and food and finding your shelter, because things have gotten really bad. So right now is the worst time to buy physical gold, in my opinion, based on the spread of the price. And what I mean by the spread, do you know what I'm talking about, Amanda?
I do not. I actually know nothing about investing in gold, except that it's a terrible idea.
Well, I did a little research on this before I got into it. I knew about it before, but apparently Bloomberg came out with a news article the other day and said the spread price, which is if I went to go buy physical gold from somebody, a company, that price is going to be way higher than the actual price per ounce in the market. That's the spread. Apparently, it's 3 to 4 times higher than it ever has before. So if you're buying right now, it could be like $140 higher than normal, which means you're getting totally ripped off. The price of the gold has to go up by that amount just to break even at this point. So buying physical gold right now is really a bad idea. So what do we want to do instead? Because if I have gold coins, Amanda, what do I got to do with these stupid things?
I have no idea.
Well, that's
you bury them in your backyard.
I have to protect these stupid little things. These gold coins are these little bricks, or I don't think anyone can afford a bar, but they have these little bricks. They look like, I don't know, Hershey's chocolate bars.
Okay.
They're about the same size. Anyway, you need to go buy a vault if you want to keep them in your house.
Oh,
you gotta store them. If your house burns down, you need to put your vault down in the basement, so when the roof and everything caves in, at least you know the corner of the house, of the foundation, to where that vault's at. I don't know if people think about that sort of thing, but I'm a retired firefighter. I think about that kind of stuff. You got to pay for a safety deposit box. I don't even know how much those things cost now at the bank.
I don't know either. They're pretty obsolete.
Anyway, you got to take care of the things. Unless you want to take them out on a Sunday and play with your little coins and show them off or something. I don't know. Some people just like to collect them, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not going to do you any good.
So, yeah, it's not an investment. It's not a valid investment.
And here's the other problem. When you want to go use them, it's not like I can go down to the store and actually give them a gold coin.
No. What are you, a pirate?
I gotta sell it. And here's what happens when you sell your gold back. You have another spread. They're going to charge you a bunch of fees and stuff on top of the cost. So you're getting a whammy at the front and the back that has to cover up your profits somewhere in there in the middle. Currently, as of recording this, it's $1,700 an ounce, and it could go up to $2,000, go back down to $1,500. It just fluctuates all over the place. If you like collecting metals, that's fine. It's not going to do you any good. The better way to do it is to just buy a mutual fund or an electronic traded fund ETF. And I got a list here, Amanda. The best thing about doing ETFs is I can buy and sell them at any time. As long as the stock market's open, I can buy and sell them just like a stock. It's no different. So here's the ones that I like. I would rather you do the boring way of saying you own an ETF. I know it's not fancy, but it is the better way to do it. So here's the first one, Granite Shares Gold Trust. And the ticker symbol on the stock market is BAR, B-A-R.
Oh, okay.
These funds actually have physical gold, but your expense ratio that we've talked about in mutual funds pays for the maintenance, the transportation, the insurance, and all of that to take care of that gold. So you still own some of that gold, but someone else is taking care of it for you. And the cost of that is only 0.17%, which is very low in mutual fund
arenas. It is low, yeah.
That's almost like a Vanguard mutual fund, but that's what that pays for. So that's like a fraction. Here's another one for you. The Aberdeen Standard Physical Swiss Gold Shares ETF. And the symbol for that is SGOL. Their expense ratio is also 0.17%. The same thing. Now, their gold, if you care about where the gold is located, it's in Switzerland.
So can you go visit it?
and like pet it? And like, can I just see it? I just want to see my little gold. And the last one, the iShares Gold Trust, IAU is the symbol. Their expense ratio is a little higher. It's 0.25%. So it's a quarter of a percent, which is still low in mutual fund arenas. They are the biggest, and their vaults are in New York, Toronto, and London. So they got like spread all over the place.
Wow.
I don't know exactly where it is. I'm sure they don't disclose that. And I know a lot of people have heard of the GLD, the Spider SPDR Gold Shares Fund. That one also is out there, but their expense ratio is a little higher. You'll hear a lot of people on CNBC talk about the GLD. They're all the same. This one is 0.4%. So that's getting a little on the high side, Amanda.
It is, yeah.
But they were the first ones to do all this, but you can still trade the other ones and get a better price. So they're all going to go up and down based on this, on the value of the gold that they have. So to me, I would go with the expense ratios, or if you like Switzerland and then you want your gold to be sitting there.
So you want to go skiing in the Alps then.
And go pet my gold. Just full disclosure, I don't have any metals, physical or in the stock market. I don't have any of these funds. I'm just giving you my disclosure statement. I don't own any of this stuff. Matter of fact, Amanda, I think the last gold I ever bought was on a Carnival cruise ship. It was one of those gold chains. Mm-hmm. I think they got me on that one, but I look stupid in it, so I don't wear it. But if I ever come down to Florida, you know, I'll put it on.
So one of my favorite set or series of movies is Die Hard. Mm. And Die Hard with a Vengeance, which I think is the third Die Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. They steal all the gold from the Federal Reserve in New York.
Gold
bars. Yeah. And they were very heavy, according to the movie.
Yes, they are heavy.
Yes. Yeah. But anyway, excellent movie if you're looking for a movie recommendation.
Okay, so we asked our Facebook group at, it's rockonthemoney/Facebook. We'll automatically forward you to our Facebook group. Or you go to the Facebook page at Rock on the Money. But here's some of the statements that people said about buying physical gold. I'm actually proud of them. They pretty much stated everything that I said in here. One person said, another good reason to have a safe in your home, just putting it out there. Most people get them for a rainy day, right? How would you liquidate them without getting ripped off at a pawn shop or similar place? Absolutely. Correct.
Yeah.
The actual storing of said items is what is the deterrent. Also, the safety of storage and is what would keep me from doing it.
Unless you own a vault in the
in your basement in the corner, but it all falls in. I don't buy them and don't plan to. I always think of them as a scene from I Am Legend, where the creatures are all nesting in piles of money.
Yeah, another movie reference.
Anything only has value given to it, correct?
Yeah.
So I've heard that they can be fashioned into excellent bludgeoning tools. Wow, see, they're thinking of the end of time. just because I want to, not really for financial security. So basically, everybody in our group already knows not to buy. So I don't know who these people are asking me this. I think they're afraid to post. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so there's our gold coin thing. I guess we can't take that to the car dealership to buy a used car, though.
You cannot. No, they're going to want a check or cash.
Well, you're going to tell me how to buy a used car. Because right now, I don't know. Are you going to talk about Hertz at all in your segment?
I wasn't planning to, but you can bring it up.
Yeah, I'll wait, because what I read about Hertz today, oh my God. Wow. I would have never thought. Anyway, that's Hertz. That's called a teaser.
Yeah. After the break.
Savvy Savings with Amanda right after this break. You're listening to Rock on the Money. Market has presented you with the opportunity to refinance your existing mortgage to a lower interest rate, potentially saving you thousands of dollars. Lenin Espinosa Mortgage and Realty Services can offer fast approvals with no prepayment penalties. The application process is only a few minutes, and all consultations are private, confidential, and free of charge. If you would like to explore your options, call or text Lenin Espinosa Mortgage and Realty Services at 323-272-7320. That's 323-272-7320. Or visit their website at LeninEspinosa.net. DRE license 0190-5738, NMLS 1607426. Rockland, USA. To Rock on the Money with Craig and Amanda.
Yeah.
And this will be the last month I think we'll do the giveaway of the gift cards, because it's really not kicking in. Like, we three people last month. Yeah. And Wendy was our winner, by the way.
Which she deserved it, because she called in twice.
Right. She didn't get two votes, though. And then she was in the live chat when I was on Facebook giving it away. So that was awesome.
Good for Wendy.
So if you want a chance to win a $50 gift card, I mean, unless we get a flood of questions, we're not going to keep it around, because it's not encouraging anybody. 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Leave a voicemail of your question. No one will answer the phone. And if we use it on the show, we'll enter you on the wheel. And we'll spin at the end of the month. Before we get into the used car thing, Hertz apparently is getting ready to file for bankruptcy.
Weird.
And I never realized how dependent the car industry was on the rental car industry. And this one failure, they are the largest car rental company out there.
Okay.
And apparently, the flood of cars that will come into the market in the next couple of months, whether they go out of business or not, they have to get rid of these cars. They're talking about 500,000 cars getting ready to dump into the market.
As used cars.
On top of all the three-year lease cars and everything else, they say it's going to drive the prices even further down. And if they do go to bankruptcy, the value of these cars isn't going to help the bankruptcy courts at all. There's so many used cars coming, which is great that you're doing this segment, they say it could take 1 to 2 years to sell these used cars for the bankruptcy court. It was an interesting article. I know I'm just giving the
simple economics, supply and demand. And right now the supply is just going through the roof. So,
anyway, I'm ready to hear about this. I'm actually excited, because this has been the news.
You're
a lot.
Always excited.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm actually, should I trade in my car to get a newer used car? I mean,
how many years have you had the Honda?
Going on 8.
Oh, you're getting close.
I'm 7 or 8 years. It's a great car, but I don't know. I mean, if something came about,
except you bought it new, so.
I did buy it new, because the other car I was in a T-bone accident. So, I did, but I paid cash. So
you did, yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, so shopping for a used car is like going on a treasure hunt, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's amazing deals out there. And with the emergence of the internet as a car shopping tool, you have every chance of finding a good deal on a car that meets your needs and can also fit your budget, especially with this influx of cars from the Hertz bankruptcy. There's also plenty of incentives to buy used instead of new. It'll save you money on your car insurance, your registration, taxes, depreciation, which is the loss in a car's value due to the wear and tear over time. It also makes sense because cars have never been more reliable. So people who have in the past said, oh, I got burned buying a used car, think twice about that now, because now cars are much more reliable than they were in the past, even as a used purchase. And it's not unusual for vehicles to be trouble-free for well over 100,000 miles. We do have a recent short episode posted that goes over the best times of year to buy a used car. So make sure you go to the website and check that out. It's labeled as a short, S-H-O-R-T. And that was just posted in the last week or so. Right, Craig?
Let me just point out, that was a funny episode, by the way. We were having fun on that episode. It was pretty good. I like that one.
Unlike today, when we're not having fun.
It was, well, I'm eating cake. But we did that, I believe, around Christmas. It was right around Black Friday, which is why we did that episode. But it still rings true today. And it was really good. Anyway.
Check it out. So here's a couple of things to think about. First, you want to make sure you're setting your budget. So I think every single episode of this podcast, I talk about budget in one way or another, right, Craig?
If it were a drinking game, yes.
I know.
Budget would be the drinking game of this.
That would be podcast. Even more fun, wouldn't it?
Yes.
So make sure you set your budget. So you have your budget, your monthly budget, but you should have been setting aside some money each month to save up for this purchase. So you'll know what your budget is. It should not be dipping into your emergency fund, because this is not an emergency. Well, unless, of course, something happened to your car and you need four wheels to get around. Yeah. But in general, it's not an emergency. But decide how much you can spend on a car and how you're going to pay for it. So are you bringing that sack of cash into the dealership, or are you bringing your checkbook, and do you have the money in the right account for that? Or if your last option is, do you need to do some financing for it? And then again, you would want to finance for no more than 30 months.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, I think I'll go up as high as 42 months, but 36 is what I really would like.
30 months is the Dave Ramsey rule.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes, exactly.
But it's hard. So, how do you get a 30-month loan?
You can set your loan terms however you want, you generally.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. See, I mean, if you have to go to 36, I mean, what's six more months? But yeah, I wouldn't go more than 36.
I think that's why I was saying 36 is, I didn't know you could walk in and, see, I don't finance my cars. I walk in and buy them.
Right.
So I just figured it was multiples of 12.
Yeah, that's the most common. So, Craig, you're going to have to remind me, what's Dave's rule on what percentage of your monthly income, your payment should be?
Oh, I need to bring up my budget. Keep talking. I'll bring it up.
Oh, okay. All right. So anyway, 12%. You've got your budget set before you walk in to look at a car, or before you start browsing online for the right car. The second thing you want to do is make sure you're choosing the right car. So pick the right model based on your needs. Just because you start browsing and something comes up and it looks super cool and flashy, don't let that distract you from what you really need. So my recommendation is, before you even start looking at cars, either online or at a dealership, make a list of your must-haves. So do you have a family? Do you need to make sure that you have enough seats in the car and that you have somewhere to put a baby seat? Those are pretty important things. You wouldn't want to be buying a two-door coupe just because it looks fun and it goes fast if you need to be picking up kids and dropping them off at daycare. Then you'd probably want to be looking more in the minivan section. Are you laughing?
Yes, minivans. Yeah, minivans. I guess they're still out there.
They're definitely out there. Every single one of my sisters and my brother have a minivan.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I do not. So another thing you can think about, is this going to be a commuter car? Do you have a lot of miles to and from work each day that you need to go? Then you definitely want to make sure you're looking for something that's fuel efficient. So write down your requirements in advance so that you know what those needs are and you can quickly filter out what is or isn't an option for you. Once you've narrowed it down a bit, you're going to want to check on reliability and ownership costs. So make sure you're choosing a car that's less likely to break down and that won't break the bank. In general, smaller engines can be cheaper. A large engine will usually burn more fuel than a smaller one. So engine size is a vital consideration if fuel economy is an important factor in your decision. I know right now the price of gas is basically pennies. They're practically paying you to take the gas out of the fuel tank, but that's not always going to be the case, or it may not always be the case. So it's still something to keep in mind. We fluctuated pretty rapidly up to between $4 and $5 a gallon a few years ago. So it can fluctuate.
Oh yeah.
And you don't want to be stuck holding the bag just because gas is cheap now.
But a lot of people use the prices today to buy the truck.
Yeah.
And then
and people
2 years
did
down
that
the road,
about 10 years ago too, and then they were eating it.
Yeah. And nobody wants the small cars, and then all of a sudden that keeps going back and forth like
a seesaw.
It goes back
and forth. Yep. It vacillates.
It does what?
Vacillate.
Oh my God. You're so educated. Please continue.
Okay. Well, that's the word of the day. How about
vacillate.
That? So, of course, that is going to depend on how you use the car, though. If you get something with a small engine, it's most efficient when it's used as intended, such as, just poodling around town. If a small engine is used at a high speed, or if you're stomping on the gas because you like to go fast, then it's going to work much harder and burn more fuel. So you're kind of defeating the purpose. Hybrids are cheap to run, but they cost more upfront to buy. I have a hybrid myself, and I love it. But again, it's not a speed demon by any stretch of the imagination. Even in sport mode, it's pretty pathetic.
But it's a fun button to push.
It is. You're like, oh, sport mode, so you can pass someone on the highway and it still struggles. But anyway, it's saving gas.
Okay.
Technology is improving every day with modern hybrids coming in all shapes and sizes. So you can get a super mini to a luxury SUV, which is more along the lines of the category I have is a luxury SUV.
Wow.
Fuel economy and cheap or even zero tax rates make part electric models appealing, like the Toyota Prius. That's not what I have. They also tend to hold their value for resale, though, which is absolutely true. They really hold their value well. So when you go to sell it again, you're going to recoup most of your costs, unlike most vehicles that depreciate at a much higher rate.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure you're checking the insurance group rating of the exact model you have in mind before buying. So when I go to look at a car, I always run it through an insurance estimate online with my insurance carrier. You don't even have to call them. Well, most of them anyway. You can just check out your current insurance, go online and price like a new quote for something, and it'll let you know how it would change your monthly fees if you took one car off and added a different one.
I do the same thing.
Every time.
People must think we're like boring people to be with.
Well, that's the worst thing. You get excited about a car and then you buy it and then you get home and realize, oh my gosh, my insurance rate's going up $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year, you know?
Yeah. Like I would love to have like a Corvette or something like, but then I think about the total cost of ownership, which insurance falls into. I look at the cost of tires. I'm thinking, I'm going to end up hating this thing like 4 years down the road when you start replacing everything. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
It takes the fun out of it.
And Craig, I know you're a big fan of Consumer Reports.
Love them.
So you must use them every time you look for a new or used car.
I use it for everything. You know what? You're going to get me on my Consumer Reports bandwagon. I'm going to bring it up next. Matter of fact, tell you what I'm going to do. I don't know if you're going to talk about it, but I'm going to go see what they recommend for used cars and we'll do it on the next episode.
Okay.
I'll go find out what they say.
All right.
Like let's say the 3-year lease cars, which would be best ones to get? We'll do that.
Perfect.
All right.
All right. So now you know what kind of car you're looking for and you have an idea what it might cost you, that certain make and model. So now you get to go and look for the good used cars. You can search online or or do it the old fashioned way by walking the car lot. Sometimes it's fun just to see what's out there when you're starting your search. But I love the online version. They do tend to update them pretty frequently, but there may be a day or so behind depending on how quickly inventory is moving. But you usually get a good idea of what's available nearby just by checking online. And then you can take a drive over to the lot to check it out in person once you've located online, but it'll save you the hassle of driving all over town.
As an old person, what we can do now online, especially this, used cars, it's so nice knowing where they're at. You used to have to literally spend days or weeks going through these used car lots.
Yeah, I mean, I've used like cars.com before. What's another good one?
Yeah, Auto Trader was an
Auto Trader.
They've been around for ages. I mean,
yeah, Auto Trader used to be like a printed flyer, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, I remember
they used to have the booklets at the grocery store.
Yeah,
and you pick it up. That was the only way you knew what was out there.
Exactly.
And then
can you imagine how much longer it took to sell a car as a private seller?
Now I go to what's the place with the big vending machine?
Oh yeah, what's that called?
Not Carvana. That's the other one.
I think that is right.
Is Carvana? They got them everywhere. It's like, it's amazing. I drive through that thing and...
Yeah, Carvana. That's the one that's a...
The big vending machine. Those things are amazing just to look at.
Yeah, and you can sell your car to Carvana.
Yeah, and they'll come take it and they'll deliver you a car. It's great. It's really big in our area. I see those Carvana trucks all the time. So people must be using them. So, anyway.
And it is a fast way to sell your car if you're looking to offload one and don't have the patience to try and sell it as a private seller. You usually get more than you would if you sold it, if you traded it in to a dealership, but less than you would if you had the patience to wait and sell it privately.
But selling privately is a pain. I don't know if you've ever done that. I hate it.
Yeah, I did it when we sold that first car that my son had, the one I paid for cash. We did that and it worked out okay. But again, it was a cheaper car and I just put it on like fake Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it didn't take that long, a week or so. Use pricing guides to help price the cars. So you'll see price tags either online or in the dash window of the car. And you can compare that against Blue Book is a good one. Carfax also has some price comparisons. Are there others that you've used before, Craig?
True Car.
That's a good
one. That's a popular one. That's one I think Costco, even Consumer Reports, I think uses them now.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And while you're at it, check the vehicle history report. So using the car's VIN, which most of these websites nowadays, even the dealership websites, they'll put the VIN right out there. So you can go ahead and look it up on Carfax or a lot of the dealerships post the Carfax report right with the listing. If you go to the dealer site directly, you can find the Carfax for free. And you can also use that VIN that they post when you're doing your insurance estimates for a more accurate estimate.
Yep.
So once you've figured it out and you're like, yes, this price is right, I'm good with the history, it's not, you know, it's not been totaled, and I know what I'm getting myself into, then you can call the seller and ask some questions before you take a look. Or if you found one online at a dealership, I would always call first to make sure that car is still available before driving over there. And then once you get there, make sure you go on a test drive. So test driving is really important and you want to make sure it's the right car for you and it's in good shape. This is something that most people are like, yeah, you get in and you're like, yep, I like how this feels around my body. That's it. But there's really a lot of things you need to be checking out along the way as well, besides just, oh, is this fun to drive? Does it corner like it's on rails, you know, whatever. So you're going to want to check the car's mileage. The average is around 10,000 miles a year. So if you're getting a car that's 5 years old, you should expect it to be around 50,000 miles, more or less. Mm-hmm. If the odometer is wildly out of range for this, you're going to want to ask why. If it's used as a commuter and they explain, yes, someone used it to drive back and forth to work 100 miles each way, that makes sense. Or if it's an older person who didn't drive a whole lot and is set on the driveway, or I guess, now that I'm thinking about it, this also applies to me. My car sits in my driveway. I hardly use it too.
I never use mine anymore.
Yeah. If the mileage is really low, then you're going to want to find out why to see or to try and figure out whether or not the crook has tried to clock the odometer and roll it back.
Because my job just requires me to fly, the only traveling I do is from here to the airport.
Yeah.
I am putting no mileage. The years are catching up with the mileage. It's finally evening out because I used to commute to Virginia all the time. And It just sits there.
I get it. I mean, I only put gas in my gas tank once every couple months. So
are you changing the oil based now on the time or the mileage?
I still do. Well, it falls in between. My car is going to tell me when I need new oil.
Well, I used to do that, but now I'm realizing that it's based on time because you can't go more than 1 year.
Yeah.
That I actually have to do it on the date now because I don't do enough miles anymore. It's crazy. Yeah. Anyway.
So, check the mileage. And then you also want to look at the overall condition. So cast a very careful eye over the car's condition. You want to crouch down looking for scratches and dents. I like to get down low and look at it from an angle. The sun will catch any dents that you won't look at or you won't catch if you're looking at it straight on. You're going to want to look for anything that maybe doesn't quite match paint wise. So maybe it's the same color, but when you look at it from the side, it's more matte rather than glossy. That might be an indication that there'd been a repair. If there's any signs of poor repair, like gaps between body panels, that's maybe an indication of crash damage. Some of these things should come up on the Carfax, but not all of them. If it's a minor fender bender and it wasn't reported to insurance, it's not going to appear on the Carfax. Mm-hmm. Check the oil. So I know you just talked about oil a few minutes ago, but do this by lifting the dipstick out to see if the level's correct. If it's not, you're going to want to find out why it's losing oil. And other engine issues, look for signs of oil or water leaks in the engine. So make sure you lift, pop the hood, and look for water or engine where it shouldn't be. It should be a nice dry engine. It should look clean. And then look underneath the car as well for any signs of leaks. Now, it is normal if you've already taken it for a drive and the engine's been running for it to have some condensation drop off of it. So I wouldn't be concerned about that. But if there's any color or smell to it, then that's a sign.
Yeah, always use two fingers, taste it, and make sure it's... No?
You don't want to taste antifreeze.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Test the radio. I know when we were shopping for my son's second car, that was really important to him.
Yes.
Testing the radio and all the other gadgets, make sure that they work. So test, the AC fans. You don't want to get a car thinking it has AC, and then when you try and drive it around, the fans on the passenger side aren't working. So you want to check for that. Turn on the lights. Make sure all the lights are working, the brake lights, the turn signals, making sure you can open and close the windows easily, that they don't stick. Can you recline the seats and bring them back up easily? Does everything open and close that's supposed to open and close? It's your chance to be very thorough, because once you take it off the lot, barring any lemon laws in your state, which not every state has, this is yours. You don't get to return it just because you find something after the fact. Make sure it's safe. So vitally, does the car seem to be in safe condition to drive? So are the brakes in good working order? Have you taken it out, really tested the brakes? I mean, you don't want to slam on the brakes in the middle of the highway. That's not safe. But make sure you find a driving route that allows you to both test the acceleration and the braking capability in the car. And just trust your gut. If the seats are sagging and the car looks like it's ready for a scrap heat, then, look elsewhere. And the other thing I would say is, if the price seems too good to be true, it probably is. A lot of times cars are way underpriced for their make and model and year and everything if they're on now a salvage title. So you do want to make sure you're checking to make sure it's a clean title and not a salvage title. And then finally, in terms of your test drive, what about the tires? You want to check for tread and inflation. And the tip I have is to take a penny, and if you put it upside down in the tread, as long as the tread reaches to the top of Abe Lincoln's head, then it's generally speaking enough tread still on the tires. And if it's not, that's a point of negotiation. So negotiate your best price using all the information you've gathered in your car search and what you've done on your test drive. Work on agreeing to a fair price. I've taken in pages and pages and pages of my research to the dealership and said, nope, here's all the other cars, same make and model, similar mileage on it from all the dealerships within, a 50 mile radius. And this is a price I think is fair. And they have very little to argue about then. And I've saved thousands of dollars that way. But word to the wise, there are a number of dealerships that have come up now that are no haggle dealerships, and the price is what the price is, and they consider those very fair prices. And generally they are.
Yeah.
Anything to share from your experience shopping for cars, even though you bought a new car?
No. The last one I bought for my daughter to get her going because she's a teacher. I paid cash for that, and I found that online as well. What one tip is if you're going to use CarMax, Carvana, or these other places that do have a 7-day return policy, this is something I do when I rent a car. Take a ton of photos before you leave. So you document everything, because if you bring it back and they see something, they're going to blame it on you if you don't have a document before you leave. So I do that with rental cars. I go out there, I take my cell phone, I take it, the top, hood, tail, you know, in all four sides, I document it and a quick picture of the inside. I would do that with the same with a Carvana or a CarMax, and just make sure it's documented before you leave. And, you know, in case you have to return it, you never know.
You never know.
Just go to if you have a mechanic friend, that would be the best thing to do. Because that helps you in that 7-day return policy.
It does.
So anyway, that was really good. I'm ready to go shopping.
There you go.
But I don't know what kind of car. No, I'm not buying no car. I want to drive the one I have.
That's right.
I sit in my little studio and create content. I don't even drive anymore. I think that's going to be the problem with a lot of people right now, not buying cars. We got this glut of vehicles out there. I don't know what.
That's right.
Anyway, that was really good, Amanda. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find Amanda on Instagram and Twitter at @AgileAmanda. And you can find me on all of your favorite social media platforms at RocklandUSA. Don't forget to check out the website and subscribe to the podcast. All the links are right there on the front page, rockonthemoney.com. Please subscribe and leave comments to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or even your favorite app that you got right there on your phone. Those help us out a lot. If you're ever looking for a specific topic or content that we've produced over time, just go to the website and in the search bar, just type in your topic, be it 401k, stimulus check, or anything, and everything comes right up for you. We have so much gratitude that you've taken the time out of your day to listen to our podcast while you're walking, driving, traveling, or whatever you're doing. Please send us an email. Let us know how you're doing out there. podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. Thank you very much again. We'll see you again next time. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.